Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Where We Used to Roam by Jen Bishop. Narrated by Jennifer Jill Araya. It could be an adventure. That's what Mom told me not even a week ago. But as I stare out the tiny, smudged window at the airline worker below as he tosses suitcase after suitcase on the conveyor belt headed for my airplane, I only feel like I'm running away. From what's happening with my brother. From what I did to Becca. From everything. And not the kind of running away we did as little kids, where you pack your backpack with your favorite snacks, a sweatshirt, and a stuffed animal before hiding out in a neighbor's yard. But the real kind. Putting 2,000 miles between yourself and everything and everyone you know. A tall guy who can't be much older than Austin, with dark brown skin, gentle eyes, and a Boston College men's basketball sweatshirt, slides into the seat next to me.
Sorry,
he says, with no choice but to spread his legs open, his knee knocking into mine.
They were all out of exit row seats.
I pivot my legs toward the window and out of his way. No worries, I say. Do you play? I gesture to his sweatshirt.
Yeah,
he says.
Forward. You?
I can't help but laugh at the suggestion. No, but my brother, Austin, he... used to. The words slip out of my grasp. He will again, I tell myself. 30 days on Cape Cod is going to fix him. It has to.
Cool. Cool,
he says, before slipping red headphones over his ears. Soon the plane is filled up. All these people headed to Denver or even farther away. Like me. Except probably not like me. I bet they're on vacation or traveling for business. Or going home for the summer now that all the colleges around Boston have let out. When it's time for takeoff, I shut my eyes tight. But this time when I close them, all I see is my brother in the upstairs hallway. Austin, with his hand in a fist. How mad he looked. But not at me. At himself. I don't like that, Austin. Can't look at that version of him anymore. I open my eyes and peer out the window as the plane dips to the left and the deep blue water of the Atlantic Ocean glimmers in the sun. I reach down, loosen the straps on my Birkenstocks, and rest my feet on my backpack. The vibrations from the engine travel up through my whole body like they're trying to soothe me. The plane levels off and we head west over the city. The skyscrapers downtown suddenly don't seem so tall. Down below, I spy the green lawn of Boston Common, the muddy water of the Charles, the stone buildings on the Harvard campus. Becca must be down there somewhere, at the camp she goes to every summer with her fellow geniuses. All the other summers, she'd complain, wishing I could accompany her. But this summer? No. This summer, I'm sure she's glad to be away from me and everyone else from our school. Happy for a fresh start after how I ruined her life. I rummage through my backpack for my sketchbook, flip it open to a clean page, and wipe my sweaty palms on my lap before uncapping my pen. Dear Becca, I write, before stopping to stare out the window again. Everything's so small, like a dollhouse world. Tiny matchbox cars zipping down the Mass Pike. From up here, you can't see the people inside. From up here, it looks perfect. That's how my life used to be. I didn't realize it until now. Didn't have anything else to compare it to. But it was. I close my eyes again, but now all I see is that look on Becca's face, almost like I'd slapped her. It was my chance to apologize, to try to make things right, but all I did was make things worse. Me and my big mouth. Guess all that time hanging out with Kennedy finally wore off on me. I press my pen to the paper. I'm sorry. Some turbulence sends the pen jumping across the page, leaving a huge scribble behind. I close the notebook, put the cap back on the pen. I can write to her later. I have the whole flight. The whole summer, really. 2 months to figure out how to fix the mess I made. 7 months earlier. Chapter 1. Maybe everything could have been different if Ms. Patel, sorry, Nisha, had never approached me in art class. Not that any of what happened after is her fault. It's just that something, someone, had to be the first domino to fall. The one that sent all the others toppling. And if I think back, it was that moment that set it all into motion. At least as far as Becca was concerned. It was seventh period, the last class of the day before Thanksgiving break. But you wouldn't have been able to tell from peeking into the art room on that gray day. Ms. Patel always had music playing in her room, a mix of her own CDs and student iPhones plugged into her speaker system. We'd rotated into art only a few weeks earlier with the start of second quarter, so I still didn't know her that well, but I already liked her a whole lot more than Mr. Morris, who we'd had for health last quarter. Seemed like his job was mostly to scare us away from trying drugs. I was half listening to the music, some kind of punk mix that my brother would probably be into, while I worked on my portrait drawing. Instead of randomly pairing us with other students in the class, the definition of awkward, Ms. Patel asked us to bring in a photograph of a family member or a loved one. "No celebrities," she'd said when Tegan Washington tried to pass off a picture of Timothy Chalamet as a distant cousin. The one I'd been bringing to life the past few classes was a photo of my brother. A snapshot Dad had taken at one of Austin's football practices this summer. Austin and his teammates were goofing off on the sidelines. It was one of those rare pictures that truly looks like the person. Every time I look at a photo of myself, it never quite matches up to the me I see in the mirror. The me I'm used to. And maybe mirror me isn't real me after all, but still. I was shading in the laugh lines around Austin's eyes when Ms. Patel stopped behind me. Her curly black hair was always up in a messy bun, and she had the kind of funky plastic glasses you'd expect on an artist. Like she'd picked them out because she wanted to look interesting rather than pretty. "Nice work, Emma," she said. "That your older brother?" I nodded, not stopping working just because she was there. There were only a few minutes left before the bell would ring, and I wanted to finish his eyes. "I can see the resemblance." She picked up the photograph. Her fingers were flecked with paint, metallic blue and burnt umber. "Really?" I set my pencil down. "Absolutely. It's all about the composition, how your nose, eyes, and mouth relate to each other. The exact same proportions." My heart sank a little. It wasn't like I wanted my art teacher to tell me I was beautiful or something. That would be weird. And it's not like I think my own brother is attractive. Also weird. But there are some things you kind of figure out from living in the world, from seeing how people react to other people. Austin was one of those shiny people, the kind everyone paid attention to when he walked into a room. Mom and Dad, too. But me? No one had ever really noticed me that way. I blended in with the scenery. "You know," Ms. Patel said, setting the photo back down, "we're always welcoming new folks to art club. You should come sometime and see what it's like." "Even in the middle of the school year?"
"Especially in the middle of the school year. So much of middle school is new, and it can take a little while to find your place. Have you taken art classes before? Private lessons?"
"Nope," I said. Though we live in the kind of Boston suburb where everyone's been taking lessons in something, or five somethings, since they were in diapers, Mom and Dad were never super into that with me and Austin. Between Dad's job as a meteorologist at the TV station and Mom buying Happy Feet when I started kindergarten, there wasn't anyone left to ferry us around in the afternoons. Austin had his teammates' parents to take him to sports practices, and me? When I wasn't over at the Grossman's house with my best friend Becca, my after-school activity was hiding out in Mom's office in the back of the running store, drawing in my notebook, surrounded by boxes of the latest New Balance and Asics. "You're quite talented for being self-taught," Ms. Patel said as the bell rang. "I hope you'll consider coming, Emma. And not that I need to seal the deal, but I do provide brownies." My mouth watered. "Maybe," I said with a smile, not wanting to give away how much she'd already sold me on it. "Have a nice Thanksgiving." I slipped my drawing into my folder. "You too, Emma. Hope to see you Tuesday." After stopping by my locker, I met Becca outside the school, by that one maple tree where we always met to walk home together. She was so glued to the book she was reading, she didn't even notice me at first. "Becca?" I said finally. "Sorry," she tucked in her bookmark. "Miss Hansen saved it for me. It doesn't come out till next Tuesday, but she said so long as I don't tell anyone." "Even me?" I said as we began our walk home. "Well, you know, you don't really care about books." Ouch. She wasn't wrong. It's not like I never read, but if you were going to compare me to Becca, it was no contest. No one at our middle school read more than Becca Grossman. Not even Mrs. Hansen, the middle school librarian. And that's saying a lot, because I'm pretty sure I overheard Mrs. Hansen saying she read more than 300 books in a single year. "Why is this one so special?" I asked. "It's the fifth and final one in the series," Becca pouted. "So, maybe if us fans clamor enough, we can get the author to put out a novella or something. It's happened before. I know what I'm doing over break." She hugged the book to her chest. "Or tonight, if I know you. But then I'll probably reread it a few times. Put some stickies on my favorite scenes." "We can still go to the movies, though, right?" "Definitely," Becca said as she adjusted her glasses. "I need to give my eyes a break sometime." "So," I said, shoving my hands in my pockets, "I think I might check out Art Club next week." "Art Club?" Becca wrinkled her nose. "What's so wrong with Art Club?" "The kind of people who do Art Club," Becca said, as if it were a certified fact that the people who do Art Club are weirdos. I got this strange feeling in my stomach then. Did my wanting to do it mean she felt that way about me, too? Just a little? "But I don't know who does Art Club," I said. "Not for sure. I haven't even gone yet." "You should have signed up for Battle of the Books back in September. But hey, you could still do forensics with me. That doesn't start for a few more weeks." I had been interested in forensics, but that was before I realized it wasn't like CSI at all. Once I learned it was about giving speeches, no thanks. When we first visited the middle school as fifth graders back in the spring, I'd been so excited. There were tons more after-school activities than we had in elementary, and since the middle school was walking distance from my house, it didn't matter anymore that no one was around to drive me. Becca and I, we could just walk home. But here we were, more than a quarter into the school year, and I hadn't signed up for anything. It was easier for Austin. When you do sports, it's all figured out for you. Fall was for football. Then he had basketball all winter and track in the spring. I promised Mom I'd try spring track, but right now spring felt a long way away. And Becca did a million activities. I needed something. "I don't know," I said. "What about math club? You're good at math." She wasn't wrong. It was my best subject. Well, after art. I'd just never had a chance to do art for a grade. Still, I wasn't nearly as good at math as Becca, who was taking it at the high school. Maybe, I said, as we waited at a crosswalk. But it was entirely different from the maybe I'd given Ms. Patel just 15 minutes ago. If I wanted to do something, why did it matter whether or not Becca was on board? Chapter 2. It was my brother who spotted the shadow boxes first. Just over 2 years ago, when the four of us went to Chicago when my mom ran the marathon. Dad was never good at standing around quietly and looking at stuff, so Austin was always the one who'd go with me to museums. We'd taken selfies at the Bean and left Dad to explore Millennium Park while Austin and I checked out the Art Institute.
You ever hear of this guy, Em? Joseph Cornell?
Austin had stopped in front of a box on the wall. It reminded me of the dioramas we made for school projects sometimes, except this one was different. For one, it wasn't cardboard. It had a glass front and wooden sides, and in the back was a piece of wood with a hole cut out, the kind of thing you might peek through. Sitting on the bottom of the box was a small globe, a little blue cube, and a red bead.
Guess he was a collector, too.
The Art Institute had dozens of these shadow boxes by Joseph Cornell, some with layers of text, almost like decoupage, several with birds and owls, one with a creepy naked doll. I was immediately obsessed with them. I couldn't get over how the way he'd arranged these objects in a box seemed to tell a story or give you a feeling. It was so much more than just some random stuff in a box. And at the same time, it was exactly that. Ever since I was little, I'd held on to things. Mom wasn't one of those minimalist moms, and she was never really strict about what Austin and I did with our bedrooms. Beneath my bed and in my closet were boxes of stuff I'd saved. When we got back home from Chicago, I made my first ever shadow box with some of my treasures from when I was little. A lovey that had made a few too many trips through the washing machine and dryer. One of those trinkets I'd begged Dad for a quarter to buy at the grocery store. A miniature plastic person. And 3 shiny pennies. According to Dad, Grandpa Bill had let me go through his wallet when I was little, and I had asked him, 100% serious, if, when he was very, very old and about to die, I could have the 3 shiny pennies. They'd all had a good laugh, and Grandpa Bill gave them to me that day. I glued them to the back of the box, the way I'd noticed Joseph Cornell did in some of his boxes, and laid out the other items on the bottom. Dad helped me hang the shadow box on the wall in my bedroom like it was in a museum. My very own Joseph Cornell, I'd said. Dad corrected me.
Your very first Emma O'Malley. You never know, Em. This could be worth something one day.
I laughed him off. Probably blushed, too. But ever since, when I think of that moment and how my dad took me seriously, I realize how lucky I am. There aren't a whole lot of other kids in my school whose parents would be okay with them wanting to be an artist. At least, I don't think. No, most people's parents want them to be doctors or lawyers or to work in tech. Even though Becca loves reading more than life itself, she already knows she wants to be a doctor when she grows up, like her parents. The Saturday after Thanksgiving, I was up late, working on my latest shadow box. A playlist was on softly in the background. When she was doing the dishes after the big meal, Mom accidentally dropped one of her favorite plates, a delicate crystal one she'd inherited from her great-grandmother, and it shattered into dozens of pieces. She was about to throw it away when I asked if I could have it for one of my boxes. "So long as you're careful and don't cut yourself," she'd said with a smile.
"I mean it. No trips to the ER for your art, please."
Mom's birthday was in January, and I figured I could make a box for her, though I still hadn't decided what exactly would go in it, besides the mosaic background I'd been imagining, made out of the fragmented glass. Downstairs, I could hear the front door close. Austin had just come home. I peeked my head out the door as he passed my room. Austin jumped.
You scared the crap out of me, Em. Why are you still up? It's 1 in the morning.
Was it really that late? I was working on a box. I followed him into his room. He grabbed a sweatshirt that had been dumped on his desk and kicked off his sneakers. The air around him smelled funny, sort of like a skunk.
What do you think this is, a sleepover?
He laughed, settling down on his bed and nestling his head into a pile of pillows. Mom didn't make either of our beds anymore. That was up to us after third grade. Which meant Austin's bed was never, ever made unless his girlfriend Savannah was coming over. I'll leave in a minute. I sat down at the edge of his bed. Was it fun?
Are parties fun? Let's see.
Stop it, I giggled. I've never been to a high school party, remember?
Yeah. But someday you will.
I don't know, I said. I couldn't imagine me or Becca ever going to one of those parties Austin goes to on the weekends when his friend's parents are out of town.
You just need to find your people,
he said, his head settling further into the pillows. From that angle, it looked like he had 3 chins. No, maybe 4. My people? I asked, as Austin's eyes started to close. His eyelids fluttered open and he shifted upright.
Yeah, Em, your people. You know, most of my friends now, I didn't know them in elementary school. God, in elementary school, I was friends with Brian Fitzgibbons. Old Fitzy. It takes a while to find your true friends. The ones who really get you. You're heard.
I glanced up at the modest mouse poster above Austin's bed, the one with the ginormous buffalo.
Some people don't find them till college, which must suck. But a lot of people, they find them in middle school or high school. There's tons of people out there, Em. You just gotta look.
In my head, all I could see was Becca wrinkling her nose at the idea of art club. But what if Austin was right? What if that was where I met my people, found my herd? To be fair, my brother, a high school junior, had a whole lot more expertise when it came to making friends than Becca or I ever did. Maybe he was right. Do you think...
I do.
No, I laughed. I wasn't done asking the question.
Well, speed it up, Em. It's 1 in the morning, and some of us need our beauty rest.
I rolled my eyes. Do you think I should join the art club?
How are you not already in art club, Em?
I shrugged. Becca wasn't into it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Since when does Becca call all the shots?
I had no answer for him.
Em, you've got to do some stuff without Becca sometimes. No shade to Becca, but just because she doesn't want to do something doesn't mean you can't. What if the artsy weirdos are your people? Spoiler alert, they probably are. I mean, you're up in the middle of the night doing art. For fun. Why should you have to miss out on that because it's not Becca's jam? You're your own person, Em. Promise.
He lay back down on his bed and mumbled,
I think that was a pretty good motivational speech.
You know I can hear you, right?
It's been a long night. The border between thoughts and speech is a little hazy.
He closed his eyes again, and I had a feeling this time it was for good. Don't fall asleep in your clothes.
Okay, Mom.
His eyes stayed closed. His chest rose and fell with each breath, and I started to wonder if he might really fall asleep like that. Hey, Austin?
Yeah?
He murmured. Thank you.
Anytime, Em.
I slid off his bed and tiptoed out of the room, shutting off the overhead light on my way out. Night, Austin, I whispered, closing his door gently behind me. Chapter 3.
You're your own person, Em. Promise.
My brother's words echoed in my head the following Tuesday as I hung around my locker a few extra minutes before going upstairs to the art room. I didn't know why I was nervous. It wasn't like Ms. Patel was scary. And in any case, no matter how awkward it was to go to a club where I didn't know a soul, at least I was going to get a homemade brownie out of it. Right, a brownie. There was my motivation. When I got upstairs, the early afternoon light was streaming through the big windows of the art room. The eighth graders, I think, had made stained glass, and the very best ones, and, okay, maybe some of the very worst, too, were hung over the window so that fragments of blue and red and green light glittered onto the tables below. So glad you decided to come. Ms. Patel turned from the easel where she was working on a painting in all black and white. It was abstract and still at an early stage, so I couldn't tell what she was going for. Brownies, as promised, are out on the table. I hope you like double chocolate chip. Who doesn't? I replied. Exactly, she said. Oh, and once the bell rings for the day, I am done being Ms. Patel. Call me Nisha, okay? I was pretty sure I could never call a teacher by a first name, even if I tried. But I said, sure, anyway, and made my way over to the brownies. Besides Ms. Patel, sorry, Nisha, no one else had really gotten started on anything yet. The other students were clustered around the brownies. Two eighth graders I knew from when we had to take the bus back in elementary school, Aisha Simmons and Donica St. Clair, and two girls I didn't recognize. One of them was Asian, with long, super straight black hair and wearing a hat with a fox head. The other was tall and white, with shoulder-length blonde hair that had a chunk dyed hot pink. Hey, Fox Hat said as I reached in for a brownie. You knew? Yeah, I said. Emma. I'm in sixth grade. Us too, she said. I'm Lucy, and this is Kennedy. We just transferred this year from Comey Valley Charter, Kennedy said. She had a gap between her front teeth, just wide enough that you could slip a quarter between them. Do you want to sit with us? Sure, I said, following them over to a table by the window. Have you been coming since the beginning of the school year? Kennedy nodded. Our parents said we had to do something after school to meet people, but there aren't a whole lot of sixth graders in art club. Except Henry. Lucy pointed to a boy I hadn't noticed in the corner. He was dressed in all black and wearing headphones while making something out of clay. Right, yeah, and no, Kennedy laughed. Now we can tell them we met you. See, we are meeting people, and we're so good at it, right? Not at all creepy. She opened her eyes extra wide and reached over, grabbing Lucy's shoulders. You see what I have to deal with? Lucy deadpanned. Kennedy seemed like a lot, that was for sure. But not in a bad way. She reminded me a little of my cousin Baxter when he had too much caffeine. While Lucy excused herself to go grab her project, Kennedy pulled out a notebook from her backpack. I'll show you mine if you'll show me yours. I reached into my backpack, suddenly hesitant. I'd never shown my notebook to anyone, not even Becca. Oh, come on. It can't be weirder than this kid Kyle back at Comey. Kyle drew nutso pictures of murdering people. And then he mysteriously stopped coming to school one day. Now that I think about it, what did happen to him? She tapped her chin and raised one eyebrow.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?